From Capital Analytics, I'm Abby Malone, and this is Invest Insights. Every week, we bring you perspectives, business advice, and more from the leading executives, entrepreneurs, and investors who are building, diversifying, and leading the way in the country's fastest growing metro markets. Real leaders, real insights, right now. These are challenging times. The COVID-19 pandemic has tested our institutions, our businesses, and ourselves in ways many of us could have not predicted. When we started this podcast, we focused on crisis management as the pandemic raged. Season 2 was all about resilience in the face of uncertainty. And our new season will look at what has emerged as the dominating theme of the pandemic, transformation. From products and services and consumer relations to future plans and how these leaders themselves have personally transformed. We'll be going in depth to learn just how much our world has changed. Enjoy.
I'm joined today by Shane Donaldson, the owner and CEO of Pinnacle Home Care. Shane, welcome.
Thank you, Abby. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
COVID-19 has impacted almost every aspect of life around the globe, and it has been especially challenging this time for seniors. How has Pinnacle Home Care transformed your services and options and abilities to navigate through this incredibly difficult time?
Yeah, Abby, I think it really starts with kind of an understanding of where the challenge started. You know, we moved into a time of great uncertainty. It created all kinds of fear. And what we needed to do as an organization was to create confidence. We immediately went back to our mission statement, which is changing lives through the art of the experience. And we said, okay, what's the new experience that patients need to receive? And above all, it was the need for safety to provide very, very safe care, and to do that not only with providing safety to the patients, but also through our staffs. You know, we witnessed a plethora of reactions, from people being hypervigilant to those people that really were a little bit more carefree about it. And what we realized was we've got to cater to the hypervigilant. So initially, you know, the challenges were making sure that people felt comfortable. And we did that through a lot of education. And of course, in the early days, the greatest challenge for us was getting our hands on PPE. We had an emergency management plan, just like most organizations in healthcare need to. And so that formulated our strategy for how we were going to evolve through this challenge and also how we were going to communicate. We, you know, sourced PPE from everywhere we could, just like everyone else. We were down at distilleries getting sanitizer. We were, you know, going to stores to get gloves and boot covers. And, you know, the challenges that we experienced in the early days were our patients didn't want to be seen. They were very, very reluctant. We needed to stratify needs and make sure that we were managing acuity, because patients didn't want to go to doctor's office. They didn't want to go to ER. They didn't want to go to skilled nursing facilities. So we really had to mitigate against the risk of exposure. But the great opportunity that we had was that most people felt like the appropriate place for them to receive care was in the home. One of the biggest, I guess, technologies or advances that we did was we just happened to be right at the start of COVID last year on the verge of deploying a telehealth mechanism that did a couple different things for us. And so this enabled us, when people were fearful, to perhaps limit the amount of time that we were spending with them or the frequency, and to do some of our services provided through telehealth. CMS was very, very responsive, and they allowed us to do that where previously it was an impediment to providing care. So the telehealth became a platform upon which we could provide the services, decrease the anxiety, provide education to our patients, because ultimately what was happening is there was a lot of misunderstanding of information, and that was creating that fear. And we really felt like that was a place that we really needed to start. For those people that, you know, didn't have the technology, as many of our elderly don't, we provided a device for them just so that we could stay connected. It also enabled us to push information to our patients so that we could manage the information that they were receiving and make sure that it correlated to what we were hearing and how we were going to provide care to those patients.
You just mentioned some elements of technology that you had incorporated, the telehealth and the technology that you provided for the elderly that might not have had it in their home. Can you talk a little bit more about the implementation of new technology during this past year? And what do you believe will be ongoing in the years to come?
Absolutely. You know, we have seen a dramatic change in the level of comfort that our patients now have with the use of technology. You know, they say that necessity is the mother of invention. Well, this has created a model that has mandated necessity. And so we see now that our elderly are far more comfortable with using technology to receive services. In fact, because of the uncertainty that persists and we anticipate will persist into the near future, patients are actually preferring that instead of going to their doctor, can I have a telehealth visit? Some of the other technologies that we use is in order to communicate with our staff more so than our patients, we have what I call a robocall, which is an automated call system that's able to push information in a consistent and meaningful way, not only out to our staff, but also out to our patients. You know, the truth of the matter is that irrespective of the vaccines that we're seeing now being released and en masse, is it really going to resolve the issue and the uncertainty and the fear that patients have? My belief is that we have a new norm is not going to ever go back to the way we were. We're going to look at this in a different way. We're going to expect to provide services and receive services in a far safer manner so that our patients feel more in control of their own destiny.
For our Invest Tampa Bay publication, you had mentioned that Pinnacle is anticipating a 40% shortage of nurses in the upcoming years. With your plans to expand operations in the coming years as well, how have you changed or adapted your hiring process to circumvent the lack of nursing talent?
It's interesting, Abby, because I actually read that statistic in Invest Tampa Bay. Having said that, I'm a firm believer that that statistic is accurate. And so we approach this in two different ways. Our organization is growing at about 50% year over year. And so we're hiring as many as 80 to 100 new staff members a month. And so we take a two-tiered approach. Number one, in terms of hiring and retention, we have disproportionately increased the resources that are associated with that. So we've increased the team by far. We use all the traditional methods of, you know, job fairs and cold calling and platforms like LinkedIn. We also have invested a lot in branding and making sure that our brand is well known. We use all kinds of technology. In fact, we're about to launch a proprietary software that is an artificial intelligence that will identify and communicate with potential staff members so that we can have access to more individuals, because that's what we're going to need to do. We use all kinds of applicant tracking software because from the moment that we make an offer and it's accepted, we might have 2 to 4 weeks before that individual onboards with us, and we certainly want to make sure that they don't change their mind. So we're having so many more touch points. One of the things that we're most proud of is that approximately 50% of our new hires come from word of mouth. So we believe we're, you know, our branding and the way that the perception of our organization is moving forward meaningfully. The other end of the spectrum, we've got to stop turnover. It is a killer to any organization that wants to grow. An interesting statistic is that nationally, we have an 85% turnover in our industry. So that means that the average person only works for 15 months, and then they go and work for another organization. So we've had to contend with that and really, really challenge it. And some of the initiatives that we've put in have reduced our turnover from the national 85%, and we're now down to under 50%, which is a monumental change. We have to be far more flexible now. You know, we had far more restrictive criteria as to who we would hire, what kind of experience those individuals would need. Now we're more open to people coming from other parts of healthcare without any expertise or experience in our area, which means we've had to really up our game in terms of training and education. We're approaching people to come out of retirement, you know, as are many of our competitors. There's just not enough nurses in the field. In terms of engagement, even more, we really, really look to reinforce our onboarding process to make sure that we really have a lot of touch points for engagement. We connect with our mission and values. Both the president of our organization and myself are now deeply involved with the onboarding process to make sure that that experience is a great one and that we are making very, very clear expectations, not only of the individuals that join us, but also on part of the organization and what their expectations should be for us. Last year, we were really thrilled that all of those initiatives really unfolded and we became Tampa Bay's top workplaces recipient. And we have to continue to kind of up the ante and make sure that we're doing everything that we can to engage staff and also to make sure that we don't lose them.
This past year has been an incredibly transformative one, and we spoke now about how you've experienced some professional transformations. But can you let us know how you might have personally transformed this past year?
Yeah, whether it be transformation or not, I can certainly say that there has been a lot of reflection and introspection. And, you know, I think that all of us have experienced two ends of the spectrum is the way I look at it. We constantly have the losses all around us that remind us of, you know, how fragile life is and, you know, what little control we have over it. You know, a couple of examples of that is, you know, we were involved in an orientation of staff just this past week where an individual postponed their orientation for 2 weeks because they just like they lost their mother. One of our executive teams lost a lifelong friend just this past week. One of our staff last week had a potential, you know, exposure and couldn't even hug their grandchild before they went into surgery. And I'm sure that many people have similar examples of that. You know, but the other end of the spectrum, we've witnessed some incredible and courageous acts, and we have seen an outpouring of love that we haven't seen in recent times. And we're reminded of the incredible resilience of the human spirit. You know, we talk about the healthcare workers and them being heroes, and undoubtedly they are. And so, you know, in terms of transformation, it's been a greater and deeper appreciation of the value of life and just how fragile it can be.
You've been listening to Invest Insights. Be sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast to hear more. I'm Abby Malone. Thank you for tuning in.